Was La Boiteuse, a drinking song from Languedoc. And, of course, that is to introduce our next segment, which Melbourne journalist Liza Capella has moved to Montpellier in the south of France to live for a year. And it's from there that she reports for us on a walking tour of local wineries guided by another Australian, Kerry Langford, who lives in nearby Pouzol, a village of 1,000 people.
Hi Kerry, good to talk to you again. Tell me a little bit about your wine walks that you do.
So I used to work at Chateau Saint-Pierre de Saint-Jacques, just around the corner from here in Pouzol. It's between Pouzol and Magalas, and it's a beautiful 19th century chateau surrounded by vines. And so I work with them to take people on little wine walks, but it takes about an hour out in the vines and explain about the life cycle of the vines and what's happening at different times of the year. And because I live here and I walk with my dog every day, I take photos throughout the seasons so I can show people what the area is like at different times of year. And I started getting interested in wine back in Australia, and I'm discovering all the differences between Australian wine and French wine. So that's quite a it's quite an interesting point, I find, because New World wines, they label everything by a Shiraz or a Shiraz or a Grenache or a Merlot or a Cab Sav. Yes. And it's very, what I find, used to be very easy to pick up a bottle. You go, oh, Sauvignon Blanc, I like Sauvignon Blanc, and I'll have that. Whereas you get to France, and they're called appellations. Mm-hmm. So the different appellations are Bordeaux or Bordeaux Grand Cru or Côte du Rhône or...
Languedoc.
And in this area, exactly, Languedoc. So the problem is nobody knows what's in them unless you're from here. You don't know what you're drinking. So you can go, oh, I like that one, that's a Saint-Chinian, that's a Faugère, that's a Minervois, but you have
you
no guarantee
what
of what the grapes will be. And actually, this is changing slightly now. You're now allowed to put they're called the cépages, the varieties, on the back label, but on the front label, it just has to be called, for example, AOP Minervois or AOP Languedoc. So in the Languedoc, we have lots of varieties of grape that can be used, but you won't necessarily know what's in it. So you have to just get to know what you like. But the interesting thing I find is I didn't know that a Chablis was a Chardonnay. I didn't know that a Sancerre was a Sauvignon Blanc. So when you taste a Chardonnay from Chablis, it's still very different from a Chardonnay down here.
Mm-hmm.
So because we've got a lot more sun and a lot more warmth, that comes through in the wine. So the what's called the terroir comes through in the wine you're drinking. So the Chardonnay from down here might have a hint of pineapple, a hint of more tropical fruit flavours, and much more fruity, whereas from the north, in a cooler climate, will be much drier and much more crisp. So all these differences are making me understand why you don't just call it Chardonnay.
Okay. And what do you see, just for anyone in Melbourne, for instance, who might be listening to this, the main differences between the Australian and the local Languedoc wines?
Ooh. Well, again, in Australia, all the different areas of wine have very different types of styles of wine. You know, a Yarra Valley wine is not the same as a Hunter Valley wine, it's not the same as Adelaide, it's not the same as Perth. And so you just have to get to know the areas that you're going to.
They seem to have more alcohol, I think, in the Australian wines.
It depends on the sun. Mm. So Australian wines, like down here, here in the Languedoc, we have 300 days of sunshine and we have very little rain. So our grapes, when they pick them, are much more concentrated, much more concentrated sugars, which means more concentrated in alcohols. So we often have reds that are 14.5%. 15 is the maximum. So most people, even if it's 15.5, they'll be called 14.5. So not allowed to water them down. But so the whites can be easily still 13 and the reds can be 14.5, you know. So they actually have to go to quite a lot of work to make them lower in alcohol.
Okay, I've tasted some very ordinary but cheap and deliciously quaffable wines down here, and also some incredibly delicious wines. It used to be, I believe, known as a big bulk wine-producing region, but I think that's changing. Is that the case?
Absolutely. Since it's only in the last 40 years, but part of the European wine lake was the Languedoc. The Languedoc made vast quantities of wine. Languedoc still produces more than all of Australia, which is interesting.
Just this little region?
Well, it's not that little. It goes all the way from above Nîmes down to the Spanish border, so it's quite a big region, really. but yeah, produces more wine than Australia. But the wines, one of the King Louis, don't quote me, one of the King Louis said, okay, Rhone Valley's going to produce quality wine, Languedoc's going to produce quantity wine. So the Languedoc actually produced all the wine for the army and the navy, and it was just keep them marching. Keep them marching, keep them marching.
They did a good job.
Feed them lots of wine. But then they used to harvest much earlier. They'd harvest in early August. The wine would have been almost green. You know when you taste a wine and it's too young and it's horrible? They harvested much earlier, so the wine had much lower alcohol.
Okay.
And so they weren't necessarily drunk all day. But you have to remember that water quality wasn't that good. So at least if you're drinking wine, it was safe. So, you know, that's back in the day in the history. But since about the 80s, things have changed a lot and people are ripping out the old vast high-quantity producers like the Carignan grape, which I don't think you have in Australia. And they're putting in more varieties that are more modern, like the Syrah, Mourvèdre, Grenache, Cinsault,
okay,
that you know in Australia.
All right. And tastings. I've certainly seen them happening around here too, but they seem to operate a little bit differently. Can you just go up to any winery door and knock and ask for a taste, or do you actually need to look out for a sign?
You probably need to look for a sign. The thing is here, they're so small, they don't have someone that can stay in the winery all day and just serve drinks. So they will either tend to have set tasting hours and they'll say we're open from X to X on X afternoons, or you phone in advance because they might be out in the fields.
Right.
And then there are the bigger wineries that actually can afford to have staff all the time, but most of them are pretty small around here, so it's best to call in advance.
Do they like doing it?
Good question. Some of the time I question that. We have... I would say there's a big mix. There are those... I would say generally those wineries that open for tastings like doing it. They like showing off their wine, they like talking about it, they're passionate. The people that are these days making their own wine, they're passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because what the other model is, they just make, they grow grapes and they send them to the co-op. Exactly. And the co-op makes the wine. But those people who are making their own wines are usually pretty passionate about it, and you get them talking and they want to tell you all about their winemaking methods and how they do it. And yes. So generally you'll be talking to the winemaker. You know, or the winemaker's wife, or the winemaker's son, or the, you know, it's generally a family business. There aren't too many massive, I'm trying to think of some of the Yarra Valley ones, you know, they're pretty big enterprises, really.
They are. Even some of the smaller ones I've been to here seem to have a bit of a variety. You'll generally get a rosé, you generally get a red or two, and a white or two. Are there any that you know of that just specialise in one, for instance, they're so tiny, or... do they generally do the lot?
Well, actually, my friends at Domaine Sarabande, he's Australian and she's Irish, and they came over about the same time as me, about 8-9 years ago, and they set up a winery, and they used to only do reds, and they've started about 3-4 years ago, they were doing a rosé, and they've realised that people ask for white, so they're actually now tasting and selling a friend of theirs white, and a Bubbles, and a Limoux. Sparkling is a Limoux wine, but their specialty is reds
and gin, I believe.
They make gin. Yes, they had. So gin is made from an alcohol, and you distill it with different flavors. So because they have the leftover from their wine, it's called a marc, M-A-R-C. That leftover ability to make an alcohol can be used to make a white spirit. So they decided, why not? We'll give it a go. And they're doing really well.
And
it's a very interesting...
And Sarabande gin was born.
And Sarabande gin was born, yeah.
Yes, I did get to taste it and it was rather nice. Although a bit salty, I thought.
Peppery, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, well it depends on your taste. Exactly, yeah. But pepper, because in London, one of the things, they wanted the real taste of the garrigue, the bush. So there's thyme and rosemary and there's lemon, definitely. But they wanted to add a bit of spice, so they've added some pepper, because some of the London gin merchants were literally adding a turn of pepper in when they were serving gin and tonics.
Wow.
Mm.
And doesn't it taste good?
Yeah.
And I think we should probably go now and taste a couple of the local whites.
Okay.
Thanks,
Let's do that. Bye.
Well, that was Liza Capella there talking with Kerry Langford in Pouzol, France. You're listening to the Travel Writers Show on J-Air 87.8 FM.
And it seems gin is the in-drink of today.
I like gin.
You probably do.
I do.
Do you get to drink as much as you like?
No. I was collecting it at one stage. I had all sorts of weird and wonderful bottles. But my kids have to drink it now. I'm not drinking that sort of thing.
All right. Oh, you can smell it. That's all you can do. Well, she's the doyen of